listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear-related on DVDverdict.com. On this week's episode, Steve walks away from the dead. John talks in a gravelly voice. And Kev goes a little old school. Episode 23, What Do You Want Me to Do? Talk 'em to Death. Good evening, you are listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, gear, holiday, controller, cat-related, family-related, piano-related, Nintendo-related, Call of Duty-related, Microsoft-related, podcast-related on DVDverdict.com.
Shrimp Creole. Shrimp stew.
With me are my usual compadres, Mr. Kevin Woolridge.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Mr. John Mercer.
Got my beer, got my controller, ready to rock this shit.
Right out of the gate. We weren't here last week. We took a little siesta last week.
A sabbatical.
A sabbatical.
If you will.
We had a break. It was a holiday weekend, you know? Give us a break. We need one once in a while. I took off out of town for a few days and had some time at my erstwhile summer lodge, my home away from home.
True that.
Which
I was busy at a sci-fi con.
You were at the sci-fi con? How did that go? Tell us a little about the sci-fi con.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was great. Really good time.
Anything else? Elaborate, please.
Well, I didn't see much. Actually, no, that's a lie. I saw a lot more than I have any other year. At the con. I actually got up a fair bit and walked around and talked to people and bought stuff.
Did you get to meet Richard Hatch?
I did not. I saw him from a distance.
That is sad.
Oh, well.
I really wanted to meet Richard Hatch. I had three events, actually, that I had penciled in on my day planner.
Right.
You know, I wanted to meet Richard Hatch just to shake his hand and say he was the coolest Apollo. I wanted to do the Geek Survivor. I wanted to get the team back together.
Yep.
Team Wing Kong.
Right.
And I wanted to go to this cartooning panel that this guy Kevin Woolridge was putting on.
Oh, right on.
But I crossed my wire somewhere and wound up going out of town the weekend of Sci-Fi Con when I thought it was the following weekend.
Oh, that happens. I did meet Fat Apollo.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Fat Apollo.
Yeah, he's this comedian from Halifax who goes to a lot of cons and does a lot of charity work and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He basically wears this, like, shirt and this cape that are made out of old Battlestar Galactica bedspreads.
So this was almost kind of like a Galactica con.
It kind of was with him there, yeah.
I'd be down with that. I'd much rather the Galactica presence than the Doctor Who presence that's flooded the place in the last few years.
Oh my God, it's turning into a Doctor Who convention, man. There were, at one point I saw these six kids, all, you know, these like preteen guys, all kind of different doctors.
Like it makes,
as a group.
It makes me weep for, you know, science fiction fans as a species.
Oh yeah, man.
I don't want to hate on anything, but you know, I've tried. I've really tried, and I don't get it. I don't get Doctor Who.
I enjoy the concept, and like...
Oh, so do I, and it's probably the best goddamn theme song in sci-fi history.
Oh, and the theme song's great.
You know, and like, I sat down and I watched the, not the most recent Doctor, the one who was in Fright Night.
Tennant, was it? David Tennant.
David Tennant, you know, I sat down, the acting enough was good, and I mean, there were a couple episodes here and there. I saw one with, the Scottish actor who played him, Chris Eccleston.
Yeah.
I saw a couple episodes with him that, you know, I kind of enjoy, but just in the long run, I'm just sitting down there, it's just like, this is just, it's got this whole weird quirk for the sake of being quirky.
It's a very campy show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, I don't get the appeal of Doctor Who. I just, you know, that's not entirely true, because one of my theories has always been, you know, you put enough mythology behind something and it will gain a fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Doctor...
I'd like to... Go ahead.
The Doctor Who fans, like, kind of...
You know, it almost feels to me like Doctor Who is the it sci-fi property for the contrarians. You know, for the guys who are sick of the whole Star Trek versus Star Wars debate.
Right.
You know? Maybe I'm off base there, I don't know. But that's what it seems like. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just stick with my Battlestar Galactica.
Well, you know, man, if you can watch something and you enjoy it and you like it, more power to you.
And that's right. Great. And I mean, like, you know, the first year Team Wing Kong was there, and we had the Mun professor, I can't remember his name now, but the guys who beat us, it was him and his son were against us. You remember them?
Yes, I do.
And that guy had an encyclopedic knowledge of classic Doctor Who. And he was a cool guy, because, I mean, at that point, Doctor Who didn't really have the prevalence that it has now.
Well, I mean, that was
like 5 years ago.
During or just prior to the relaunch.
Yeah.
That's right, it was, yeah.
Because, I mean, because you had that really, really bad made-for-TV movie that came on Fox in, like, 1996. And then there was, like, you know, 9 to 10 years where nobody even touched it.
Yeah. So, well, you know, there's Kev's thoughts on Sci-Fi Con. What have you been up to, John, other than playing video games?
Working.
Yay.
Working. Endless 10-hour shifts alone.
Oh, man, I feel your pain.
Running the operation. You know, just some bad stuff went down at the office. We had my boss/business partner had a family emergency, and I had to step up to the plate.
That's how it goes.
Yep. And it is it's just been a long, long, long couple of weeks. And for the fourth year in a row, I missed Sci-Fi Con because of it.
We went to the cabin. We did our cabin thing, which was great. Myself and Sarah.
Nice.
By ourselves, which was awesome. Abby did her first swim meet. We got her time sheet today. She's on the swim team now.
Yeah.
And we got her first like swim competition time sheet today.
Yeah.
And she finished last in all three. Fine. But man, when I was 8 freaking years old, I wasn't going to swim meets. You know? I thought it was really cool.
That is cool, man.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
Shout out to Abby, even though she doesn't listen to this podcast. Because we cuss way too much.
We do.
With all that out of the way, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. The brass tacks, gentlemen. The brass tacks.
That'd be a great name for a band. Although it'd probably turn out to be like some hipster Wes Anderson douche band. Like, I mean, that would have been a great name for like a 50s rock band, like Link Ray type deal.
Ladies and gentlemen, the brass tacks.
Sending you home with the sweet, sweet sounds of daylight.
Mr. Ulrich, what you've been playing with, homeboy?
Oh my goodness. It's been pretty busy video game wise, actually. Last week I finished off Space Marine.
Space Marine!
I did indeed. I enjoyed it an awful lot, being a Warhammer fan, boy, anyway. I was disappointed with the last boss. I thought it was really cheap and horrible.
Really?
Oh, it was terrible, man.
Was it a
I'm not going to spoil it. Yeah, very much, but
cheap, horrible, challenging, or cheap, horrible, broken?
Cheap, horrible, just cheap, man. I don't want to ruin it. I'm not going to tell you guys.
Okay, I don't want to know what the boss was. But is it just circle, strafe, and shoot till he's dead? Or was there actually, like, a trick to it?
Okay, spoiler alert. I won't give away too much, but I'll tell you. It's waves of enemies. Until you get to the boss.
Okay.
Right? And then the boss is a fucking quick time event.
Right on.
Yeah.
Okay, so kind of like what was supposed to be the awesome yank the Star Destroyer out of the sky in Force Unleashed.
Yeah,
and it wasn't awesome in practice.
Yeah.
Was it at least a spectacle?
Yeah, it was still cool. It's still Space Marines, you know, but that combined with the fact that the character didn't really have an arc whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing, and like we've been looking at.
He's an ultramarine, Kevin.
I know,
what
but
character arc can he possibly have?
Yeah, but if you're telling a story, there has to be an arc to the character.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Or it's not worth telling. Yeah,
exactly. Right. I mean, I understand that he's pure space marine right from the beginning right to the end, but it's not interesting story wise, right?
Yeah, and that was. I've been reading through Death Watch, which is the Fantasy Flight, the Warhammer 40K pen and paper game for Space Marines. And I want to play it. I really want to play it. It looks great. It looks awesome. And like the mythology and everything is so cool. But that's the big part I'm having trouble wrapping my head around is how do you build a mythology? Like how do you build characters out of the Space Marines? Because they're all essentially just walking Cuisinarts.
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of, it makes... The lame.
You put that book down and you pick up Rogue Trader.
No, I have no interest. Like the only interesting mythology is with the Space Marines. But I don't know. It's just like you know. It makes the shallow two dimensional, horrid, ridiculous excuse for a plot from Gears of War 2 and 3 actually look pretty complex. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes those characters look deep.
Mm.
If we sit down and play that, I can promise you the only words out of my mouth for the entire campaign, every time you talk to me, are going to be an eye roll and for the Emperor.
Awesome. But I still enjoyed my time with it, right? It was still a lot of fun and all that kind of stuff.
I still say it was a better game than Gears 3.
The little I played of Gears 3, yeah, I'd say it's still better. Yeah, definitely. So I played a lot of that. I played a lot of WoW.
Son, you got to stop that. We're worried.
I'm back in, man. I'm back in.
Just when I thought I was out.
Well, he didn't do what I said he was going to do, John.
What's that?
He didn't go out and buy a 60-day prepaid card.
Oh, no, I didn't. I'm still on my 10 free days from, you know, as a returning person. But
I don't know when I'm going to lose my friend. You know, we're going to see him on a street corner filleting dudes for... extra minutes in Azeroth.
For an epic mount.
Well, that's what I'm working towards, a flying mount right now.
See, that's how it starts, Kev.
Yeah.
You start
you want an epic flying mount. For me, there's a lot of nostalgia because it's been so long since I played it. And I'm revisiting all these places that I used to play in. I don't know. There's something I'm seeing what the appeal was and I'm remembering what the appeal was about the game. And I'm actually enjoying it.
I gotta say, when I fired it up last year when Cataclysm came out, I did feel similar.
Yeah.
You know, I had similar feelings. It was like, oh, hey, look, Orgrimmar, oh, you know, and I enjoyed my time with it.
Yeah.
But for me, my best times with WoW were I had either Angela or Daisy, or I think on one occasion it was both of them, all three of us were sitting in the basement with the laptops playing WoW together.
Yeah,
and that was awesome.
that was really cool. I mean, I've never been a hardcore WoW player. I'm not somebody who does auction house or raids or guilds or anything like that.
Yeah.
No, I just play it for the single player, going around with my turtle, hunting stuff kind of aspect.
You're kind of like me. You just like the exploration.
I do, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much. So I've been playing a lot of that. What else have I been playing? I've put a lot of hours, well, not a lot of hours, comparatively speaking, only probably 3 or 4 into Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Woo!
I forgot how good that is. We're going to talk about that later, so I'm going to leave that alone for now.
Yeah.
And finally, me and my brother have had a couple of retro gaming nights the last 2 weeks. Just really enjoying playing some old school Nintendo, man. Having a blast. Tonight.
The classics.
Yeah, tonight we put on pro wrestling. Do you remember this one? That's it, exactly. And this is probably the first Nintendo game that me and my brother played when we were kids. And so we sat down tonight, since I got a second controller finally today.
Which one do you pick, Starman? Because there's always somebody picks Starman.
Oh, I always play Starman, yeah. We sat down to play a two-player game of a game that we hadn't played together in like 20 years. And it was awesome.
That is cool as all hell, man.
Yeah, it was so much fun, man.
We got to get a Super C night on the go. Do you remember Super C?
Oh, yeah.
Man. Oh, dude.
I remember me and Kev, I think it was on Mother's Day, He stayed at my place, and we just stayed up all night playing Super Meat.
I remember that, yeah. I remember that there was a Mother's Day.
You had gotten an NES Advantage for your birthday.
Yeah, that's right.
That was awesome.
Cool. Yeah, so that's
Super C. Super C laughs at your advantage. And then it crushes you.
Anything else?
That is it. What have you guys been playing?
How about you, Mr. Mercer?
Yeah, just a couple from either week. Starting off, I started playing and eventually reviewed for the paper the long-awaited release of The Witcher 2 on Xbox 360.
Cool.
And Gus, you know, I'm not a PC gamer at all. But after seeing the special edition of Witcher 2 last year at your place, Steve, and seeing had the PC hooked up to the big screen TV.
Yeah.
That's a game I wanted so bad it was like acid in my mouth, right? I really, really, really wanted to play it. And it was like the sweetest pair to finally get that. It's just such a great game. And, you know, even in the wake of all these, because, I mean, it's been a great couple years for RPGs.
It has. It really has.
So, like, the cynic in me almost wants to say it's been too great. But then I slap the cynic in the mouth and tell him to stop being such a pretentious douche. But, I mean, like, from what I've played of The Witcher 2, this not only is it a solid RPG, I mean, this gets right up in the face and, like, bitch Skyrim, right? This takes out its European glove and just challenges everything to a duel.
It is a phenomenal game. I mean, if anyone out there listening will recall, I picked it as my number 3 for last year. And it is a master.
Honestly, dude, I think if this enhanced edition had been what was there last year, that probably would have ranked. It might have shifted the balance a little bit.
Well, I mean, it kind of was, actually, because the 2.0 patch was released last fall for PC. And that is that's content identical to what we got on Xbox 360 now. So, like, the arena was in there, which is horribly addictive, a lot of fun. And the tutorial mission at the beginning and stuff, all of that was actually included in the 2.0 patch, which was given out free on PC.
I'm going to say something here is going to make me an enemy of PC gamers everywhere, though.
Yeah?
This game was made for a controller.
Dude, I only ever played it with a controller. It supported the 360 controller on PC as well, and it was all mapped perfectly. They remapped
it. Was there any lag or anything with it?
Oh, man, it was perfect. That was the only way I played it, was with the 360 controller. Initially, I tried playing a keyboard and mouse, and it did not work at all.
No. I mean, it's so complex.
Yeah. And just, you know, he controls like a console character. You know, when you get into combat, when you pull out your sword and stuff like that, it feels like a console game. It doesn't feel like the first Witcher could not have worked on consoles without major concessions. The second one is more built for the console interface. It's more built for a dual analog stick, you know?
Yeah. But there's complexity and depth there.
Yeah.
And, you know, depth is something that's thrown around a bit too much as a buzzword nowadays. But, I mean, there is just, like, unbelievable combat options. And, you know, like, I know you were talking a couple weeks ago about the, you know, you're making moral choices without knowing you're really making them.
Yeah.
And the consequences may not be evident until, you know, 2, 3, 10 hours later.
Exactly. And the first,
you know,
there's choices
made that seem so simple that completely change the second half of the game.
Yeah.
You know, your third act might be something completely different.
Hell, your
characters who are trusted allies might become, you know, hated villains.
It's amazing, man.
Yeah. And, like, the only complaint I've really seen anywhere, I mean, The 360 version is not as good looking as the PC version.
But, I mean, that's a gift.
Obviously, but when you look at the 7-year-old Xbox 360 pulling off, like, I can't believe CD Projekt Red got that to work that well.
Dude, and...
That's a goddamn looker of a game.
There's two big things with The Witcher, and this is the thing. Number one, I think it was Namco came out and said basically that it wasn't a port. That's bullshit. It was a port. Right from the get-go.
Yeah, that's right. Namco are the publisher in
Europe.
Yeah, in Europe. That's right.
And over here, there's the PC version here as well. Or co-published the PC version. But, to say that it's not a port is crap. That's a lie. And number two, the guys at CD Projekt did say that it was made with zero compromise. That's also true.
Yeah.
You know, the experience is identical. I mean, no, it's not as pretty. And, I mean, my PC can handle it on pretty high settings. You know, I couldn't crank it. I couldn't max it. But I could come very close to. And, I mean, hooked up to my big screen TV with the downgrade and resolution and the fact that I'm using, like, a PC video card through a HDMI port and stuff like that, it didn't look that much drastically better than it does on 360. But if I fired it up on my 19-inch monitor or my 22-inch widescreen monitor on the PC, it looks pretty stunning, you know?
Yeah.
But that's...
But, I mean, even that said, yeah, the 360 version is still... That's a... I mean, it's easily on par, if not better, than the admittedly superior 360 version of Skyrim.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's Skyrim with a little more, the characters look a little more interesting.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, what I mean, I might as well get into my thoughts now, too, because that's one of the ones I've been playing, of course. I'm about 11 or 12 hours in now. And my thing with The Witcher 2 is we've had so many of these big open-world RPGs in the last little while. You know, we had Skyrim. And to a lesser extent, not so open world, but still pretty non-linear and pretty open-ended narratively, we had Dark Souls, which is, again, amazing game, absolutely incredible game. Not taking anything away from these games. But how long has it been since we had a really, really strong narrative-driven RPG? You know, I'd argue Dragon Age Origins. I wouldn't even, like, Dragon Age 2...
Yeah, it feels like 4 or 5 years, man.
Yeah, I mean, I love Dragon Age 2, but... a really strong, like, a narrative that really propels you to play, I gotta say, it's been ages since I played an RPG where the story is what's been pushing me through the game, you know? I mean, I love the exploration feel of Skyrim and stuff like that. I love how, you know, just roaming the world and discovering new things. I mean, that feeling of exploration is amazing, is absolutely fantastic. But The Witcher 2 has that narrative push, that whole... You know, you want to find out what's going on with these characters. You want to find out what's going on. You get intrigued by the political machinations. And then you see the moral compass. You see the whole, the gray moral decisions and how things can change so rapidly. And it's just like, man, like, it is really, you know, like, uncompromising is definitely the right word to describe it. They don't care. They don't give a shit. There are no concessions made for the mainstream gamer or the core gamer or, you know, to ease the rating or anything like this, you know, they really went out all out and made the game they wanted to build, you know?
And I just love how all the characters, they find this really good balance to make them equally lovable and loathsome.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'll be the first to admit, Geralt, he's a dick.
Oh, I love him.
But he's such a, he's a scamp.
Oh, man.
But I mean, like, you got that opening thing, and I'm sitting there, you know, you hear the guys all talking about the king and his foolish war, and you get into the opening cutscene, and I'm like, man, what was the king's name? Foltest. Yeah, and I'm just sitting there like, man, that guy's awesome.
He's badass. I mean,
I
felt it's just that opening chapter, that prologue, man, the way they set up Foltest as a character, when the end of that hits, that payoff is huge. You know, you really are screaming at the TV. It's like, oh, you son of a bitch! You know? They do an amazing job with that.
Yeah, just, it's an... And any Xbox player out there, because let's just face it, you know, I've owned a 360 for years, and I know what it's like to go so long and just be hungry for something only you can only have on that system.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, I'm not going to count, because I'm not going to count the PC market. Might as well say it. But this is that game, you know, Xbox owners, welcome to your new fantasy.
Yeah.
Right? This is what you've been waiting for.
I mean, I said it a year ago when I played the PC version, and I still stand by it. They really, and I mean, I felt it the same about the first Witcher. I mean, I think some of these European studios, like CD Projekt Red, man, these guys are the future. You know, these guys are really, they're standing on the cusp now.
Not only are they the real deal, but they just, the direction games are headed.
Yeah.
Is the road is being plowed by companies like this.
These guys are where Blizzard and BioWare were 10 years ago. You know, these guys are really kind of like you said, they're making that inroad. You know, they're really making the name for themselves. And like The Witcher, the original Witcher, I mean, I'm still saddened by the fact that it wound up not coming to Xbox 360 and PS3. Because it was just such a phenomenal story, so well executed, and the version, like what they were working on, this one, Rise of the White Wolf, the elements from the combat, like all of the elements they made to basically consoleize, I guess is the word, the first Witcher game, and I mean that in the best possible way, all of these elements were what wound up in The Witcher 2, so like the nuanced combat, like, you know, the real-time combat with the active dodging, and like all of the art signs and all of that kind of stuff, all of that stuff was elements that were kind of being worked on for Rise of the White Wolf.
Right.
And I really hope that The Witcher 2 is enough of a console success, like is such a big deal for them that they can at least take the assets from the first one and plug it into the second one's engine and give us like a DLC version or something like that of Rise of the White Wolf. I'd love to see it. Because it's a game that deserves to be experienced. And I mean, I say that the stories are separate, you know, they are standalone between The Witcher and The Witcher 2, but there are definitely a lot of threads that connect them as well. And you can only benefit from seeing the first one, you know?
Yeah.
But that second game is, I mean, it was an amazing game on PC, and it's just as goddamn amazing on Xbox 360. Like, you know, like I said, zero compromise, man. If you'd never played the PC version, you can remain blissfully ignorant of how it looks on PC, play it on Xbox, and be completely and utterly enthralled by it.
Mm.
It is a technical marvel. And it runs so smooth. No frame rate hitches, no glitches, you know, like it feels rock solid. It feels like a polished game. Anything else on your end, John?
Yes, one more. One more. On the opposite end of the spectrum.
Uh-oh.
I rented, not bought, but let's make that perfectly, abundantly clear. I rented Prototype 2.
Oh, God.
Now, anyone who's been with Blast Processing for a while will know that we weren't the biggest fans of Prototype. I believe the nickname for a while was Proto-Shite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it stir up a considerable amount of controversy.
Yep.
First review on the pitches.
I still can't believe the amount of comments we got. First on that, and then my review of Infamous.
Yeah.
And the guys, you know, the only problem is that one of these games is a big 50-pound sack of crap, and the other one's Infamous. Infamous is actually good.
Oh, Prototype. Ugh.
And Prototype 2 is much like Crackdown 2 and Saints Row 2 is essentially the same game, only they found a way to make it worse.
Awesome.
Yeah, like, okay, you remember how much you hated...
My name is Alex Mercer. I'm the lead vocalist of Cannibal Corpse.
Well, take that in the first one and make him angry and black, right? Like, get ghetto angry.
Awesome.
And have every second word out of his mouth either shit or an F-bomb.
Awesome. Sounds fantastic.
It's just, it's just, people don't talk like that. And then you take the gameplay, and it's, I believe it's the guys who developed Hulk Ultimate Destruction, which was a bit of a sleeper hit on the PS2 and Xbox.
Yeah.
So, when Grand Theft Auto 3 hit huge. Everyone had that period, you know, where you just, you plug in, you just go around for like 15 or 20 minutes just causing random mayhem. And then, of course, we'd all had that friend who you'd go over to their place and they'd be playing the game. And you, like, you'd want to see some awesome part two, but all they wanted to do was, you know, shoot hookers and hit sweet jumps.
Well, I and like that's the what, jumps, that's for sure.
Yeah, but no, this is what Prototype 2 feels like. It's just, there's, take Grand Theft Auto, like just straight up mayhem, pull the story completely out of it, and then take out all the cars. Right? It's just, it gets really boring really fast. And, you know, you're going to hear people arguing that, you know, you can karate kick a helicopter.
Yeah.
But it's just, guys, once that luster has been wiped away, like if I get bored with that incredibly easy, you know, I like having a story in my games. I like something pushing you along. Something, you know, some sort of reward for actually playing it.
Mm.
And Prototype 2 is just, it's shit.
I'm going to make a call right now based on what I've been seeing around town for the last week. I mean, Prototype 2 has been on the shelves, what, a week and a few days now?
I came out on Tuesday, actually.
Was it this Tuesday past or last week?
It was just this Tuesday past.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, either way, I'm going to make a prediction right now based on how many of the copies I've seen floating around the local game stores.
Yeah.
The game doesn't sell worth shit, and the developers are gone by January next year.
Wow. Is this an Activision title?
Yep.
Oh man, the shutter is dropping.
Yeah, that's my prediction. That's my prediction right now. I'm calling it.
And is it like, yeah, all the reviews have been saying the same thing. You know, it needs some originality to be infused into it.
Yeah, right.
And it is the exact problem that's we had with stuff like with Crackdown or Saints Row 2.
They give you this great big sandbox to play in, but they give you no reason to want to play in it.
Exactly. You know, combat is just, it's just the same wide arc attack mashiness we've been playing for the past few years. The character is completely unlikable. You know, it's Kratos without the theatricality.
The only thing I care about is revenge, motherfucker.
Oh, man. I'll pass. Not even
I never
for,
played the first one.
Not even for $10.
Kevin, okay, you own Infamous, right?
I do indeed.
You don't need
to play the first
that.
One.
Okay.
Stabby
Tentacles is not a superpower.
I'm going to say it right now. I absolutely despise the first one. I was very, very generous to the first one based on my thoughts of it. When I reviewed it, I think I gave it a 3 out of 5, was it, Jeff?
Yeah, we said if any lower than 3 out of 5 pretty much stated mediocrity. Anything lower than that implied that the game itself was busted.
Yeah, and I you know, I gave it a 3 out of 5, and I tried to be as positive as I could be in the review, and I basically...
If I remember correctly, it was something we were all looking forward to.
We were, and part of the thing with Prototype is when Prototype was released, there was a bit of a a vaporous period, you know, like there wasn't a whole lot of big releases around that same vicinity, you know.
It was before developers realized that you didn't have to jam everything into the end of the year.
Yeah, but
and I think the mild success of Prototype and you know, Nintendo had a bit of a hit that year with Punch Out, and then you know Sony had Infamous, and they started realizing that you could stagger the releases a bit more?
What it was just, you know, like, there wasn't anything there. People latched onto it, and Infamous was around the same time, and of course, I was really pleased by what I saw with Infamous, so I compared the two. I tried to basically compare Prototype to Infamous and come up with Prototype's shortcomings instead of just out-and-out railing on the game, because we were the first review online, because I'm pretty sure there was a review embargo on it. But I'm going to say it right now, Prototype was absolute shit. I hated that game. I was very, very generous in the review because I didn't want to seem like I was attacking it. And I hated it. Like, if it were up to me, it would have been a 2. Well, it was, I mean, it was up to me. We didn't really have any editorial oversight, but I felt that giving it to two, people would think it was an outright attack. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to attack it. I wanted to rip it a new asshole, because I fucking hated that game. It was dog shit. And the second one, I don't even know why it exists. I weep for, you know, people who buy that game.
I even hated, I saw a commercial for it the other day. The one with Hurt by Johnny Cash in it.
Oh, God.
And, you know, it's kind of become, like, how many major games have come out now in the wake of the first Gears of War and, you know, put in a sad song in the background?
Just something, you know, surreal and
yeah,
and morbid.
And it, okay, it's worked for two of them. That first Gears of War ad,
yep,
and the Splinter Cell ad with God's Gonna Cut You Down.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was.
But this, I was sitting there watching, I was like, Hurt? That's a song about regret. No, not about jumping off a skyscraper and stabbing people.
Oh, it's just really cool to put dark Johnny Cash songs to video game trailers these days, that's all.
Yeah, they're making me not look like Johnny Cash, and I never thought that'd be possible.
Anyway, enough about Proto-Shite 2.
I tell you, man, when my game comes out, I'm having Journey in the ads. Actually, no, Journey, Wheel in the Sky.
There we go.
There we go.
I did have a pretty a busy week, and also kind of a high-profile week, which was pretty cool. The aforementioned Witcher 2, which I pumped about 11 hours into, which has been amazing, absolutely incredible. I did sift through my junk email folder late last week, and discovered that since about the beginning of February, or middle of February, I've been in the Diablo 3 beta.
Nice.
So, I had to fire it up and immediately download the beta client and start playing Diablo 3.
And how was it?
Freaking awesome.
I bet you.
It is. I mean, man, I had my doubts. I will not lie. I had my doubts. I was a little, I won't say concerned, but, like, the rumblings weren't all that great. And, I mean, I know anything Blizzard does these days is going to get looked at under a microscope and haters going to hate. You know, everybody's going to want their glass of Haterade. But I was a little concerned, and I fired up the beta, saw the character select screen for the first time, and heard the music, and it was just like, man, I'm playing freaking Diablo.
Nice.
And I created my barbarian. I hit the first area, which I'm not going to spoil for anybody. And, well, I mean, everybody probably knows. This could be all over the net. I wasn't really following it, so, you know. But it's great. It's freaking Diablo. I love how it's set up. It, you know, I mean, I go back to, you know, 1996 when I wasn't really all that much of a hardcore gamer for that little brief period of about 2 or 3 years where I had my PC and I played a few PC games, but I wasn't really heavy-duty into it anymore. And pretty much all I played was Quake 2 and Diablo, you know? And I was right there again. I was right in that Diablo frame of mind again. And then I think, of course, about when Diablo 2 came out and how much of Diablo 2 I played. And it's awesome. It's kind of like you, Kev, returning to World of Warcraft, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was that whole, man, I'm playing a Diablo game again, and it's freaking awesome. It's great. Like, it ran beautifully. It looks fantastic. The areas, it really harkens back to the old games. Like, it really picks up the mythology. It's a lot more heavy on mythology than I thought it was going to be. There's stuff going on. The effects are great. The attacks feel great. I love my character. You know, the only negative complaint I have about it is that the character choices, the choices that they give you, the 5 starting characters, are a little unorthodox.
Right.
And there's no real, you know, for us fantasy hardcores, like, you know, Diablo 1 we had the warrior, Diablo 2 we had the paladin. There's no just straight up, you know, sword and shield fighter.
Right.
The barbarian can adapt to it, the barbarian can use shields, can equip swords, and he's pretty versatile. And of the 5 that are there right now, like, I've only tried 2, I've only tried the wizard and the barbarian, but the barbarian is the only one who interests me.
Okay.
As a character, you know, like, even, I mean, my original playthrough of the first Diablo was as a rogue. And then Diablo 2, I had the Lord of Destruction expansion, so I used the druid, I think it was. he had all the animal companions, and like they were different characters, but they still felt, you know, high fantasy enough.
Right.
But like this demon hunter or whatever it is they've got, and the witch doctor, it's just really unorthodox. It feels really weird.
Okay.
And that was a little bit of a disappointment for me, I gotta say. That was a little bit, you know, Blizzard just kind of being esoteric for the sake of being esoteric, you know? But overall, you know, it's an amazing game, and I mean, I played an hour of it and then promptly hopped online and pre-ordered my collector's edition. So,
cool.
I'm super pumped to see the final retail, and I'm hoping they do something with, like, add-on characters and stuff like that, too. You know, I'm hoping they keep supporting it with extra classes and that kind of stuff, rather than pop out an expansion every year, maybe give them to us in patches or something like that. I also thought it was really cool that when I logged in and started playing, I was chatting with one of my buddies who was playing World of Warcraft.
Cool.
You can cross-chat across Battle.net with it, which is pretty awesome.
Nice.
And the only other one that was another, is a beta, actually, was Ghost Recon Future Soldier.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I've been waiting for that one.
It's awesome. It is absolutely, John, as much fun as we had with Gratu, if we can get the old band back together with this game, it's going to be fantastic.
You're going to break Tambo out of prison.
Oh, no, he's already pumped. He's already got it pre-ordered, man.
Yeah, did he ask? Do we get to win this time?
Yeah, no, he's got it pre-ordered. Brian's got it pre-ordered. I haven't been talking to Ken about it, but I got to get Ken to pick up the PS3 version. If we can get the five or six of us that used to play together back online with this game, I think it's going to be fantastic, man. The gameplay feels great, looks really, really nice. Complete opposite of, you know, Call of Duty, Battlefield. You know, it's that.
And it looks like it's still got those, like, the big set pieces.
Now, the single player, I can't comment on the single player because I've only played, you know, two multiplayer maps, and they were just basic straight up. It's objective maps, like basically you're playing, and the objective keeps changing, it keeps switching up.
Yeah,
and
I'm cool with that, man.
Yeah, but I hope that the robustness that we had in the private games, I hope that still is in effect. You know?
Yeah.
I hope that we can still customize our matches to the extreme that we did with Gra 2. And the complaint, the only real complaint, and I mean it's not even so much a complaint, it's just kind of a disappointment, I guess, is it's following the Call of Duty and Battlefield level system where you get to level up your character to unlock new weapons and scopes and attachments and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And what I loved so much about Gra was we'd go into our custom games and we could just outfit our characters as we see fit. You know, it didn't have to be like, oh, hey, I want an M4 with an iron sight. Oh, too bad, I'm not a level 4 or whatever, so I can't have an iron sight. You know, like, that kind of thing. I'm hoping that when we go into a private game, we can just pick from the weapons that we want to use instead of having to go into the online multiplayer and unlock everything by leveling up, you know?
Yeah.
Because that I mean, I don't have time for that. I don't have time to sit down and rank my character up to level 20 to unlock all the different assault rifles in the game and whatever else. You know, I couldn't be bothered. I just want to get into a private match, set up our usual, you know, like, sniper only or something like that, 3 lives each, pick whatever sniper rifle out of the 15 or 20 sniper rifles that they've got there and go, you know? That was always more fun to me. But yeah, the game is fantastic. It's really good. And I'm looking forward to the final. I'm looking forward to see what they got in store for the single-player campaign, because that last I saw that, it looked really damn nice. And the last thing I played was Telltale Games' latest release, The Walking Dead, Episode 1.
Well, that's Telltale Games. I didn't know that.
It is, yeah, it is. And it is awesome.
Cool.
It is absolutely fantastic. I'm not up on the show or the comic book, so I can't say if the character in it was in the book or in the show or whatever. You're playing as a guy named Lee.
Okay.
And he's a convict, basically. He's been convicted of something or another. I don't know, because the storyline hasn't really told me yet. It's hinted at things, but it hasn't really spelled it out. And it's structured like a cross between, you know, like Resident Evil and old-school adventure game. You know, like it's got that really, that old-school style to it. It's, so far, I'm really enjoying it, and the graphics are fantastic. It looks like comic book pages animated, you know. The controls are great. Controls are really smooth, really easy to use. It's almost got a bit of a Heavy Rain vibe to the action sequences. But again, it's different.
Like, drawn like Borderlands.
What's that?
It's all drawn like Borderlands.
Yeah, yeah, it's got that comic book art style to it, right? But the animation looks great, man. I think, to be honest with you, it almost looks a little nicer than Borderlands.
Oh, yeah, I'm just looking at that trailer here now, and I agree with that.
Yeah. But I love the character. I love, like, the character you're playing as. He's really cool. And you can kind of shape him as you see fit based on, like, your answers and stuff. And, like, in some of the dialogue sequences, I found it was really cool. Like, I talked to one guy, and he asks me a question. And when I answer based on one of my four face buttons, it says, you know, it pops up in the corner of the screen, so-and-so has remembered your answer to this question. You know, like that kind of stuff. So, like, you know it's going to come back into play later on based on how you answered.
Cool.
I'm really impressed. I bought the season pass. I splurged. I spent the $19.99 and got the whole 5-episode pass. But, of course, only episode 1's out so far. But I played probably about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. And I'm really digging it. I'm in it for the long haul, for sure.
Nice, man. That's great.
Unless they do something really shitty with the storyline, but I can't see that happening.
Yeah.
Man, and the atmosphere. It's a kind of a half-terrifying game.
Hmm.
But not in that, you know, Dead Space or, like, pants-crappingly terrifying, but just more unsettling and disturbing, you know?
Yeah.
Really, really good. Really pleased. Happy with my purchase. I highly recommend it.
Cool, man. Yeah, it looks really neat.
Now the news!
News!
News! We still have news. We'll hit with, right off the bat, release dates. This is a big one. Halo 4, November 6th, 2012.
There you go.
That's all I got.
That's a big one, though.
It is a big one. I'm really looking forward to it. I want to see how they continue the mythology.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
Bethesda teases Shinji Mikami's latest effort, a survival horror title codenamed Project Zvi, which we're told harkens back to Mikami's Resident Evil roots.
It looks pretty cool. I looked at the concept art they put up, and it looks pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
When we talk about Resident Evil roots, are we talking about tank controls, or...
I don't know. I mean, there's so little known about it right now, but I think it's pretty cool that Mikami's doing a game for Bethesda.
Yeah.
That definitely intrigues me.
Yeah.
Well, man, whenever his name gets attached to anything, it's you know, you're guaranteed that it's at least going to be worth a gander.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, for sure.
Cool. We actually have some Minecraft news this week.
Yay!
Pocket Edition, which I've kind of abandoned since I upgraded my graphics card, has seen an update that a lot of people were looking forward to. They've added crafting.
So now you can mine and craft.
So far, all you can mine is coal, because they haven't added iron or diamond tools and weapons yet.
Well, that's just lame.
So you can craft wooden and stone tools and torches and bits and bobs and that kind of stuff, but you can't make anything with iron or diamond yet. But it's still very cool. It kind of, the user interface is very, very different, obviously, from the PC version. But really nice to use, actually.
Simple and elegant?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Not as random as a blaster.
A more elegant weapon for a more civilized age?
That's right. I'm pretty excited because, I mean, where I'm going away for the summer, I don't know if I'll be able to take my PC. So if I'm going to be doing any Minecrafting, it's going to be on my iPad, right?
For sure.
Right, so. Speaking of
Bethesda, the pretty cool-looking alien-slash-cyberpunky Prey 2 has been put on indefinite hold.
Hmm.
Which is sad. Rumor has it the developers at Human Head Studios and the execs at Bethesda are involved in a little cat-and-mouse back-and-forth over financial arrangements. One of the stories I heard is that one of the guys at Bethesda, like at Bethesda Softworks, is basically trying to get the guys at Human Head a better deal through ZeniMax, the parent company. So I don't know what's going on there, but I mean, they'd say they've been very firm in saying that it's not canceled, it's just on hold. Human Head have basically said, you know, we're not just going to sit by and wait. there's rumblings that they're working on a sequel to the absolutely ancient Viking Slaughterfest, Rune.
That would be awesome.
I'm very excited.
Oh, man. Rune was a cool game.
Rune was a very cool game. I still had the PS2 version, which was a launch title in 2000.
Wow.
And, you know, every now and again, I still pop it in. I won't lie. It shows, you know, that it definitely has that late 90s PC sensibility about it. But it's still a pretty fun little game. And if there's one game that, you know, I've all but forgotten about that I'd like to see a sequel to, that's definitely up there.
Yeah. Very cool.
I hope it's graphic as hell.
It would have to be, man.
Merch sales in the U.S. of A. of video games was down 26% year over year this past month, continuing the trend of declining sales all around. Now, the question is this something to concern us, or just the nature of 6 to 7 year old console life cycles?
I think it's the latter.
Yeah, I'm willing to agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't think video games are going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, we're not looking at another Atari level crash here, people.
Yeah.
No, not gonna happen. It's too much of an art form now. Like, it's too much ingrained. It's more like, you know, in the days of the Atari, it was a specialist market. Now it's a mainstream thing. It's there with music.
And besides that, in the days of the Atari, they didn't have any, you know, identical shitty games were just being flooded onto the market.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There was so much stuff coming out, and 99.9% of it was just absolute unplayable crap.
These kind of news stories kind of bug me a little because, like the way it's done in such a sensationalist fashion, like, you know, this whole doom and gloom.
Doom saying.
Yeah, it reminds me of anybody remember the movie slump of a few years ago? How, like, Hollywood was out saying, oh, the film industry is in a recession, oh, film sales are down, ticket sales are down, but it's not that everything dropped. It's not that, you know, everything was going into crapper. It's just that sales weren't as high this year as they were last year.
Yeah.
And people don't see, like, you know, they don't broadcast the numbers. It's like, okay, video game sales were down 26% from last year. How much money did they make? You know, where was the profit? Like, what was your profit? Nobody said anything about profit. You know, nobody said anything about how much revenue was actually brought in. You know?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of new games that are coming up, Sony is going to be announcing something huge on Friday, apparently. You guys all know what it is by the time this episode is out, so we're speaking to you from the past. The rumor is it's going to be the Sony All-Stars Smash Brothers clone. I can't remember the company. Is it like Robot something or other?
Super Robot, I think.
Super Robot Entertainment,
yes.
Maybe working on it. New developers, new
company. Yeah, it's the first game or whatever. Yeah,
they got a really cool website. I really dig their style, actually.
Yeah.
So who knows what this is going to be all about?
If it's this Sony All Stars fighting game, I'm going to vomit in my shoes.
Right, right.
I'm just, you know, blah. I couldn't be bothered.
Are you just gonna like bend over and just puke all over your shoes? Or are you actually gonna take them off and lift it up like it's a like you're gonna drink wine out of it and then throw up in it?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm curious, and you know, maybe it'll be a bit of fun. Who knows?
I'd rather
them announce some sort of new big killer app IP than a Smash Brothers clone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's going to be tailored to move, and it's going to be a curiosity at best, and there'll be nothing any of us would be interested in plunking down $59.99 plus tax on.
Yeah, and I mean, we know it's not God of War 4, because they announced that last one.
I'll try the demo, anyway, see what it's like, and I'll let you guys know.
I kind of hope it's either a Resurrection of the Last Guardian or Killzone 4.
Ah, yeah. That'd be cool.
That would make me happy.
Yeah.
Out of Japan, Dragon Quest
Jumping Flash, Steve.
What?
It's going to be Jumping Flash. You know it.
Jumping Flash. Ugh. Out of Japan, Dragon Quest X goes on sale on August 2nd for the Wii.
Well, now.
It's an online game. It's actually an MMO, which I think makes it the Wii's first MMO. The only other game with any kind of major online component that I can think of on the Wii was Monster Hunter 3.
Huh.
Which was kind of done more like Phantasy Star, I believe. But, yeah, Dragon Quest X, Japan, August 2nd, Wii only, apparently. I wonder if we'll get it over here. There's no word, but maybe there'll be another Project Rainmaker kind of outcry. See how Xenoblade and Last Story do, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so, man. Hmm.
In other RPG news, BioWare alumni at Stoic Games have successfully kickstarted the Banner Saga, an amazing-looking role player that, thanks to the very generous donators at Kickstarter, will be featured on PC, PSN, and Xbox Live, and feature fully orchestrated music by Journey composer Austin Winteroy.
I think it looks fantastic. I'm very happy that they got it off the ground, actually.
I don't know anything about this.
Look it up, man.
Did you guys notice... and when I was looking up news stories earlier, it's been a very heavy RPG week, hasn't it?
It has been, man. And
like all the big news has been RPG, like big game announcement news has pretty much been RPG related.
Yeah, and I find it amazing how much stuff has been centered around Kickstarter lately. Thank you, Tim Schafer.
Oh my god. It's turn-based Vikings.
Have you seen the art style?
I'm looking at it right now.
Man,
and
it looks phenomenal.
I'm really keen on this.
It looks amazing. They based their art style on Disney's Sleeping Beauty.
It reminds me a little of Don Bluth, actually.
Yeah. Was he still a Disney kid back then, John?
Don Bluth?
Yeah.
Don Bluth would have been around for Sleeping Beauty. He's old as fuck now, but...
Yeah, he probably wasn't alive at that point.
Born in 1937.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe. But yeah, I mean, it looks gorgeous.
Looks so cool.
It looks
no Bluth. Gorgeous. Bluth was around in the. Oh shit! He was an assistant on Sleeping Beauty.
There we go.
Okay.
Don, you old bastard. I'm just kidding. Everybody knows I love Don Bluth.
I do as well. Actually,
love Don Bluth. Even though he looks like the mummy.
Emotep. Yeah, I think that game looks phenomenal. I think it looks great.
It does, man. They made 723% of their goal.
And I know, like, they got all their stretch goals and stuff.
Right. Awesome, man. That's cool.
This one is you, is it, Kev?
This is me?
Yeah.
Oh, the list is out of order. That's
yeah,
fine.
I shagged it up.
All right. So, continuing Kickstarter and RPG news, Shadowrun Returns has successfully blown past every conceivable stretch goal and continues to thrive. We're going to be getting two cities in the game.
Yep.
A new quest thread featuring Jake Armitage from Shadowrun SNES. And Harlequin from the Genesis version, and the pen and paper variant. I can't speak tonight. Now, is that only for people who pre-order or backers?
No. The last video, he came out and basically said that it's not just for supporters, but supporters will get, like the Kickstarters will get first dibs.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And his reasoning behind it, actually, I thought was really cool. Because the backers themselves said, you can't just give it to us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Cool. I got to stop you for 1 second, guys, because I just noticed the game my brother is playing in the next room.
Shadowrun?
No, he's Captain America at the moment.
Not Captain America and the Avengers.
I guess it is. The screen is getting really psychedelic.
for the NES?
Yeah, NES, yeah.
Dude, that was an LJN game.
Oh.
Joe. I am disappointed.
Congratulations, Joe. The winner is you. Man, there are cats everywhere in my basement. What the hell is going on?
They like Shadowrun, too.
They must. They're both, like, right up in my grill here now, and I think Jack is looming just in the distance.
You know, I am dreadfully afraid that one day the ass is going to fall out of the Kickstarter thing.
Oh, but, I mean, we know it's coming. We know
it's a bit saturated, man.
Yeah.
But right now, I gotta say, I am really digging this whole, like, the success that some of these games have seen.
Yeah.
And just allowing, you know, gamers to say, because it's, you know, it's cool that if you back it, you know, you're pretty much, that's your way of purchasing the game.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see gamers allowed to say, this is something we want bad enough that, you know, we'll support you like this. We'll plunk our money down before it's even made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we'll treat it in a manner, that, you know, like, we want it, so we're willing to upfront some of the risk. You know, we're willing to say to the guys at Harebrained Schemes, for example, you know, like, guys, we want a Shadowrun game, a sequel, so badly that we're willing to help pay for you to make it for us.
Yeah.
You know, and
we remember the old Schaefer's old point-and-click adventures fondly enough that we'd like to see him go back and do another one.
Yeah, and I mean, in some respects, you know, like, it's very much a two-way street in regards that the developers can kind of put their ideas out there and really gauge what the reaction is going to be.
And yeah.
I kind of said it about Schaefer with the whole, Tim Schaefer to kick the Double Fine Adventure. Some guys, yes, they're going to coast on name brand alone. That's what Schaefer did. And, I mean, there's no shame in it. There's no shame whatsoever. You know?
Besides that video of him when they pass, I forget how many hundreds of percent over what they were supposed to do. I took a video of him basically snorting coke for a rolled up $100 bill.
Oh, that man is great. I mean, I nothing but respect to Tim Schaefer, and I'm glad it worked out. And
yeah.
I'm super duper glad. Like, I mean, Schaefer is a guy, you know, like, he's had some difficulties, yes, but that company, like Double Fine and Tim Schaefer, have enough of, like, they've got
enough street cred.
Yeah, well, I mean, Notch basically called him out on Twitter and said he would fund Psychonauts too. You know, like, yeah, sure, he was talking out of his ass, but that'll tell you right there, like, he's got the cred, he's got the love, he's got the respect. What did Jordan Weissman have? You know? Like, I mean, yeah, sure, I knew who he was, but I've been playing pen and paper Shadowrun since 1990. You know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's guys like him, and these guys at Stoic, you know, these are just three staff members from BioWare Austin, I believe, who, you know, decided that they wanted to make a turn-based RPG. And they're getting their wish fulfilled, you know? And, like, the same with Weissman.
It shows the power of an idea.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think it's great. I think right there, like, I was worried that, you know, guys like Schaefer would dominate it, but I think it's great to see that, like, guys like Weissman and these guys at Stoic can come out and can be successful with it, can really, like, present an idea that's strong enough that people are going to vote with their wallets and say, yes, we fucking want to play that. You know?
Even Wasteland is coming back.
Yeah. That's another amazing example is the Wasteland Kickstarter. You know, like, how many people knew what Wasteland was?
Man, I didn't even know.
I knew because I was following Fallout before it came out. But, I mean, right. I didn't play Wasteland until after I'd played Fallout. You know? It was a game I found on an old 5 3/4-inch Commodore floppy disk.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap, I own Wasteland. I gotta play it, you know? I think it's awesome that these guys are getting the opportunity, and I'm glad in that regard that I was, like, well, so far anyway, knock on wood, I've been proven kind of wrong there, you know?
Yeah.
I hope, like John said, I hope the arse doesn't fall out of it tomorrow. You know, I hope more people get the opportunity to get their stuff off the ground.
You know what? I think these developers, they can't go, hopefully they're smart enough not to go to the well too often.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, Schaefer, okay, you got your money for the game. Don't turn around next year and do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, don't go back to, you know, Double Fine Adventure 2, a Kickstarter project, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to, actually, I'd like to see, you know, if they get any measure of success out of this, I'd like to see him get another chance with a major publisher.
Yeah, yeah, and he will, man. I mean, this is the thing. Schaefer will always get a chance with a major publisher. He will. I mean, all it takes, and this is the hard thing, like, this is the harder truth to swallow, I guess. Schaefer's biggest problem is Tim Schaefer.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's so, and God love him for it, but he's so creative a thinker, and he's so just off the map.
Yeah.
You know, like, stuff like Brutal Legend and Trenched, you know, it's like, man, like, you know, who would put the money behind this stuff? Or Costume Quest? What major studio would fund a retail release of Costume Quest?
And Stacked?
Stacked, yeah, I mean, like, you know, he's just so off the wall, he's so creative with his ideas, and I mean, even that goes back to the LucasArts days with Full Throttle. I mean, Full Throttle was great! Absolutely fantastic!
That shit insane.
Totally insane. Grim Fandango, great game. Insane, but great, you know?
Yeah.
And that's his big, like, all Tim Schaefer would have to do would be, you know, a few big releases, like along the lines of Once Upon a Monster, which I know, like, I mean, he says Once Upon a Monster, he was pretty close to his heart. He had a great time developing that game. But, you know, I don't think that was a situation where Double Fine went to anybody and said, we want to make a monster game for Kinect. That was more a situation of, hey, would you guys like to develop a Sesame Street game? Because, whoa, fuck, you're Tim Schaefer.
Yeah.
You know? Like it's not like
Doug doesn't have opportunities. Do you want me to hang with the Cookie Monster?
It's not like Schaefer himself doesn't have opportunities. You know, it's not like he can't generate revenue. Whereas Weissman, I don't know where he would have got it.
Whereas Weissman, who had to license his own goddamn creation.
Yeah, and I have to wonder, you know, like I mean, I'm sure he wasn't hired up for a dollar or anything, but this is not a guy who's coming from, you know, decades of video game development or anything like that. You have to wonder, where did he come up with the capital to actually license Shadowrun from Microsoft, you know?
He did look kind of pale in the video.
Yeah, God knows how much of his personal stake is riding on this game, you know? Like, we don't know these things. I mean, I'm sure Schaefer's in a similar situation, too, though. I mean, I'm sure Schaefer is, you know, I'm sure there's a certain degree of risk where he's concerned as well, you know. And I guess part of it, too, is with Double Fine in particular, you know, it's not just Tim Schaefer that Tim Schaefer is worried about. He's worried about his employees as well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, man.
He's a noble cat. I propose, right now, Blast Processing TV Kickstarter project.
I know that it worked, man. I'm ugly as fuck.
It doesn't. Man, look at Top Gear.
Yeah, but they're British. They have an excuse.
We're Newfoundlanders. We can coast on charm. Well, me and Kev can.
Oh, man.
Go fuck yourself there, fella.
$100,000.
Do you guys hear that?
What's that?
I hear something. It sounds like the retro rocket's firing.
Oh.
Oh, man, we're going too fast. We got to slow down.
We got to do the Wile E. Coyote slingshot maneuver.
You wearing your helmets?
I always wear a helmet.
I left mine at home.
Got your hockey helmet on?
Playing hockey on the ice? What?
Out on the ice?
All right, so I'm going to fire the retro rockets at you guys.
Fire the retro rockets, Mr. Woolridge.
Favorite Castlevania game? Old school.
Go.
Well, for me, Symphony of the Night.
Yeah?
It's got to be, man. I forgot, I've been playing it this week, and I forgot how good that game is. Everything about it.
It's pretty awesome.
It is, like, I had more fun playing that than I have playing, you know, some next-gen games, you know.
Die, monster! You don't belong in this world.
And that's the version I go back to play.
What is a man?
A miserable little pile of secrets!
But enough talk. Have at you.
Dude, I still love that boss music.
Oh, it was awesome. That game was great, man. That's
the first 2 minutes of the game.
Yeah. That setup, I mean, you got to look at it. I mean, yeah, okay, I had Diablo. I had Quake 2. I had a few of the crappy early 90s, you know, FMV, PC games and stuff that I thought were kind of neat. But my zest was gone. You know, like, I just, you know, my computer was an MP3 box more than anything at this point. And that and Final Fantasy VII just dragged me kicking and screaming right back into gaming again, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing that opening of Symphony of the Night, that just blew me away. I had to have a PlayStation.
Yeah. I think I played that whole game at your place, actually.
You probably did.
Yeah.
What I always loved about Symphony of the Night is you always felt like you were discovering something new, or the game was, you know, you'd kill a random enemy and get a new weapon you'd never had before.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, you'd walk into a boss chamber and see something just that... Because, I mean, we were still very much in the Super Nintendo frame of mind back in 1997.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, you'd walk in and, like, see a gigantic ball of corpses and just blow your mind.
Yeah.
Right? Sprites bigger and more detailed than anything you'd ever seen before.
And it was just so damn huge.
Great music, man. Holy moly. Yeah.
The game was just so immense. And that whole reverse castle gag and stuff, you know?
Yeah. That was genius. That was absolute genius.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. I gotta say, I definitely dig Symphony of the Night. However, it's not my favorite.
All right, give it to me.
This is a tough one. It's a really tough one for me. Because, well, I love Dracula's Curse, Castlevania 3. That, to me, was kind of the high point. That was, you know, the zenith of core Castlevania gameplay.
Was that the one with the three characters?
Yeah.
Some people say that was the peak of the 8-bit era.
Yeah, like that, and I mean, again, it was a great showpiece for the NES. You know, it was a fantastic little game. That was good, but I gotta say, I absolutely adore Super Castlevania IV.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure, man.
It was just, you know, such a great showpiece for that machine, man, for the SNES. Like, it just, every effect and bell and whistle and stuff that you could cram into that cartridge was in there. And
yeah.
I love the 8-direction whipping. I love the being able to, like, lock your whip onto anchor points and swing. Some of the boss fights were just incredible. It was you know, just long enough. The ending was pretty cool. The last boss fights, that last little castle section where you basically fight four bosses in rapid succession, was pretty amazing. It was just an awesome game. It was a really cool game.
Yeah, all of them being fucking balls hard.
Balls hard.
Yeah.
And I gotta throw one other one out there. I gotta throw some love to Castlevania Dracula X. Rondo of Blood.
I don't know if I ever played it, actually.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Both versions are amazing.
Yeah, I had an import version on the TG-16 that I only owned for maybe a few months before my TG up and died.
Right.
And it was a situation where I knew it was coming out, but I wasn't really, I guess, as aware as I should have been, because I was kind of wrapped up in the excitement of the SNES launch and stuff, too. And had asked for it for Christmas, for the Turbo, and got it, but it was all in Japanese. Because Mom had gone to my aunt in Ontario and asked if she could find it up there, and she asked her son, and he found it. So it was, you know, it was like one of those, oh, cool, you know. But I didn't have it for very long before my TG, like, I think the CD-ROM attachment gave up the ghost or something, which sucked because it was barely used. I never touched it.
Right.
But, I mean, I enjoyed it then, but I didn't play a whole lot of it. But it wasn't until, Mercer, remember when you found the online version?
Yes, I do.
And we had the PC Engine emulator on the go?
The Magic Engine?
Yeah. Played a shit ton of it then.
Are you, me and Jeff sitting down there, had the controller plugged into the PC, and like, this game is awesome.
It's, what an amazing game, man. It really was a great, great Castlevania.
And that one was actually, man, for all like anime-inspired visuals, that one was actually really freaking creepy.
Really creepy, gorgeous looking. Really, and like, and no, it wasn't as deep as Symphony of the Night, but next to Symphony, it was by far the deepest of the 2D Castle.
Well, it was the start of the modern Castlevania mythology.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is where they introduced the idea of the castle as a shape-shifting demon, and the Dark Priest shaft and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, Symphony of the Night was a direct sequel to Dracula X.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, it was an awesome game. Such a phenomenal game. And I almost liked the core, like, you know, the Richter Belmont core gameplay more than the Alucard gameplay in Symphony of the Night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, I like Richter more as a character, and I just liked how he handled in Dracula X. I thought he was a really, really fun character to play as.
I also thought Richter's character design in Symphony of the Night was way, way, way too good to be wasted on the little tiny bit you got as him.
Yeah, yeah, that's true as well. But now you could enter the little code and play through the whole game as him.
Yeah, I know, but it's you're not meant to, right?
Yeah.
It takes tricks to get around the castle.
Yeah, this is true.
There's certain places he just can't reach.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta say, I guess, two-way tie between Super Castlevania IV and Dracula X.
Cool. Okay. What about you, John?
Well, what else is there to talk about? You know, I'm a huge fan of Castlevania 64. And no, you know what? I'm going to go with Super Castlevania 4.
Yeah.
I was a couple years late to the Super Nintendo party. You know, I got mine in the fall of 1993. I actually I got my Super Nintendo the week Mortal Kombat hit home consoles.
Oh, okay.
I can remember I got it, and I had a couple friends. They all had Sega Genesis. So we went down to the video store and the old Allen's Video, and we rented a shit ton of Super Nintendo games. And of all of them, Castlevania 4 was the one that really showed what that system could do. You know, you had like, I can remember flipping through the Nintendo Power and watching the segments on, that's how bad I wanted a Super Nintendo, because, I mean, I was, what, 9 when that came out? And I'd actually sit down and watch episodes of Video and Arcade Top 10, and I hated that show. You know, who names their kid Nicholas Pickles? What is wrong with you? I'd sit down and watch the segments on it, I'd flip through Nintendo Power looking at the Super Nintendo games. And because, I mean, it was just, it was such a leap in graphics quality. And, you know, the gameplay was starting to get, when things are getting a little more advanced, you know, all the extra buttons on the controller and that. And Castlevania 4 was the first one that really, really stretched, really threw everything at you. You know, you had the level with all the Mode 7 rotating, and they, instead of just throwing it in there as a graphical effect, they actually designed the level around it.
Soundtrack was also amazing.
Oh, God, was it ever.
Yeah.
I can still, I always loved the map in between the levels. And I remember when you finally got into the castle itself and got through those first couple levels and you started the ascent up to Dracula's tower. Yeah, instead of getting the normal the really
organy.
Yeah, you got this really somber version of Bloody Tears and then Vampire Killer.
Yeah.
It was so awesome.
Great game.
And it had every level seemed to have its own little, you know, own little gimmick. Right? You had the one where you were trying to climb the tower and you're being chased by the giant spiked gear.
Oh, it was awesome. Clock tower level.
And, you know, you had just so many great effects, the fog transparencies. You had that really cool, the level that was being floated as you were climbing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of climbing in that game, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, it was just a steady progression upward.
Yeah.
Did you know it's not considered part of the official Castlevania timeline?
Yeah, because it's essentially a remake of the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of
I'm just doing some reading.
Yeah, it's kind of lame.
Yeah.
That's just because the fans don't like it because it had omnidirectional whipping and stuff like that.
Oh, but that was awesome about it. That was one of the great things.
I agree. But for some reason, it's not good enough for the Castlevania purists.
Okay.
Those guys are the guys who say that Dracula X is the best game in the series, though. So, I mean, they're not all bad, I guess.
Either that these are all to the people, though, who just blindly hated Lords of Shadow.
Yeah, which I thought was amazing.
You know what I say to these people? Same thing I say to the people about the Dante redesign in the new Devil May Cry. Suck it!
It is a great series, though, man. Castlevania is just such a great series.
For sure.
It was one of the few 8-bit and 16-bit series that, you know, when games started to get a bit more mature, kind of naturally made that jump.
Oh, man, I even love the PS2 versions.
Lament of Innocence is fucking incredible. I can't believe we didn't talk about Lament of Innocence.
Well, that's not really old school.
No.
That's not retro enough yet.
You want to talk about badass music?
That game was incredible, man. Lament of Innocence and Curse of Darkness. Curse of Darkness gets a bum rap, but that was an awesome game, too.
Lament of Innocence's soundtrack is on my MP3 player, and the Golem boss fight music is... I'll actually go looking for that one whenever I'm, you know, doing anything intense.
Great series of games.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Good choice, Mr. Woolrich.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to play a lot more. I'm at level 8 right now in Symphony of the Night. I'm going to keep playing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Where are you in Symphony of the Night?
I am in the interior of the outer wall, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Making your climb up to the library and the clock tower.
Yeah, I walked into the clock tower and then walked out.
Yeah, because it'll kick your ass at that stage.
A really, really big skull.
And I walked into the library and I was like, ooh, awesome music.
I still have the Symphony of the Night soundtrack.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. I think it was Tony gave me that.
Okay.
Does it have I Am the Wind on it?
It does.
Nice.
Just like
should it they should have never removed that in the PSP port.
They did?
Yeah, the PSP port, the one that came with...
Dracula X?
Dracula X.
Yeah.
They redid all the voice acting.
I heard that. I heard they did that.
And they removed I Am the Wind from the end credits.
That's pretty crap.
Wow.
I think I had...
Because it was cheesy, but awesome.
I think I had the PSN version. Like the PS1 Classics version.
Yeah.
I think I...
That's got the classic craptacular voice acting.
Well, I mean, that's just the direct port of the PS1 version. But now, I mean, I own a few copies of the PS1 version anyway, so I'm not hurt up.
Did they record that game underwater?
I think so. I think it was just a matter, man, of not having enough space on the disc, of just having to use compression. Having to compress the audio a bit, right?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's a lot of echo in it.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think they just had to compress it to a lower bit rate. Now I've got to go play some Lament of Innocence or Curse of Darkness.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I vote we call it an evening.
Sounds good.
I've got some Lament of Innocence to play. You've been listening to Blast Processing, the epic length edition to make up for what we missed last week, you know. I've been Steve. With me has been Kevin John. You have been listening, I hope, and not ignoring us. If you have been ignoring us, why the hell would you have us on droning around in the background? That just doesn't make any sense to me. So, you know, if you want to check us out on Facebook, www.facebook.com is their URL as far as I know, and then you can put a little slash there and say Pages, I think it is, and then Blast Processing.
Or you can just search for
Blast Processing. You'll find us. We're not hard to find. We're easy to come by on that whole Facebook shenanigan thingy. You can also subscribe to us at DVD Verdict Presents on iTunes. Or you can hit www.dvdverdictpresents.com or www.dvdverdict.com, and you'll find us on either of those. You can hit us in the forums on dvdverdict.com, where we've got our own little subsection, Blast Processing, where we shoot the breeze on a weekly basis.
Tons of great podcasts, man.
Tons.
At DVD Verdict.
Lots.
Yeah.
Also, mad shout-out, earlier this week we did launch They Came From the North. also on DVD Direct Presents, which is a kind of Canadian film-centric podcast. For those of you who aren't so into video games, if you are, why the hell have you sat through 2 hours of this?
I like The Wizard. That was a movie. That was about them video games.
So, you know, if there's anything we want to leave you with this week, it is this.
Gonna need some more FBI guys, I guess.
Farewell.